Welcome to episode 18 of Disky Discussions. I'm your host, AB Besson. I'm joined by Braden Proctor, South African-born football agent, lives and works in England. We discuss how Brexit paved the way for Percy Tau, football agent myths, the value behind moving to Europe at a young age, and what South African footballers need to do to forge a successful career abroad. Stay tuned for that and a lot more. Braden, thanks for joining me on Disky Discussions. It's great to have another South African based in England on the podcast. Obviously, you're an agent over there. Tell us a bit about your past. You obviously grew up in South Africa. Why did you decide to go to England?
Hi, Abby. Thanks for having me on. And my passion's always been football and football in South Africa in particular. Grew up in Johannesburg, lived a bit in the Eastern Cape as well. And then moved over to the UK to further my education and potential opportunities. So I studied there and then went to university in London to study sports law and football business, just to give myself a bit of more insight into the game and into the sport, and kind of qualify myself to be in the best position possible. But my heart and my passion always lies within South African football, and hopefully it's the development of the game in the country. So yeah, that's sort of the brief synopsis for now.
I see the Jabulani ball there behind you, I think. Obviously, South African link is still strong within you. Do you follow the South African game at all, the DStv Premiership? Do you have any, it's as journalists and agents, we can probably not classify who we support, but growing up, was there a specific player or team that you followed?
Well, that's a difficult one to say. In terms of the national team, I, of course, always follow them, you know, no matter how good or bad they are playing. I'll always find a stream somewhere, no matter where I am in the world, to follow the national team. And that goes right down to under 17 as well. I remember having to watch the Gauteng Future Champs skipping out of class to go and stream that on YouTube back in the day, and also watching under 17 and under 20 AFCON, and then up right until the national team as well. The Premier League, the DStv Premier League, unfortunately, I don't follow too much. The games aren't as accessible over here. I did, however, manage to catch the final game of last season when Chiefs threw it away. I was actually out in Spain watching it. So, yeah, really shocked at that one. But I don't have a strong affiliation necessarily. Like, because when any South African team plays on a continental level, I kind of put my affiliations and my loyalties to one side to support whichever team's playing and representing the country. So try and look at it from a bigger picture.
Yeah, it's a diplomatic way of putting things. Have you always wanted to become an agent? I think the journey to becoming an agent is a question I'd like us to delve into. There's a lot of people out there that I'm sure that are very interested in becoming a football agent, and we can talk about the less glamorous side and the glamorous side of it further into the podcast. But how did you go about becoming an agent, and was it a difficult course to pursue?
So when I was about, you know, I think everyone who kind of has a passion and a following for football, we all have dreams of making it bigger, but there's a certain point in your teenage years where you have to be realistic with yourself. And, you know, I had to have a conversation with myself that I wasn't going to make it as to a higher level as I wanted to. So how can I help and impact people in a positive way from a different perspective though? And agent, I think I was about 16, 17, and this was sort of a field and industry that really, really interested me. I was interested in the business side and the legal side of football as well. So, I was just contacting a lot of the biggest South African agencies at the time, just speaking to them. And then obviously when I was in England, I followed a course that strongly aligned sports law, strongly aligned to all the regulations of agency. There used to be an exam. So you used to have to be a FIFA licensed agent. The exam was really difficult, really low pass rate. That all changed in 2015 when FIFA deregulated. So they basically handed the regulations down to a national association level. So now agents just register with their football association. So I'm registered with the English FA. There's no test or anything anymore, although that could potentially change going forward as FIFA's re-looking into it. But I've always wanted to help people and be on a positive side. And an agent's just merely an intermediary, which is actually what we're termed now, an intermediary that exists to supply and demand of labor in football and to make sure that that supply is met. Yeah, it's not as glamorous as people think. There's good and there's bad towards that. But yeah, happy to sort of help. And I do keep in contact with a lot of younger agents as well who want to come into the game to pass on advice, to share knowledge, anything that we can.
I think before the podcast, you referred to agents as being the necessary evil, in the fact that a lot of people see agents as a negative side or just trying to exploit players or clubs. Obviously, we just see, or as fans, we just see, you know, the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. Tell me a bit more about how important agents are in brokering deals and what important part they play in, you know, for clubs and for players getting the money they rightfully deserve.
Right. So, It is just to ensure that labor within football supply and demand is met. So you speak to clubs and they say that's where the sort of term necessary evil comes in, because we as agents are a fluid in the game that's necessary to help facilitate the transfer market, to facilitate clubs with their recruitment. I think it gets a lot of bad press because if you say like the tip of the iceberg is the only bits we see in the media as football fans, maybe. So individual agents earning commissions of millions of pounds, say, for example, which is not necessarily always the case. And obviously, because fans have a emotional attachment to the game, when they see money leaving the game, you know, it's not in the best picture. But people who kind of look into football and understand it, it is something that's needed, and it's facilitated in the free market. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And the thing is, another myth, I think, is, you know, I think a lot of agents see or portray that they work against each other almost, in a sense. Do you think the agents should be working together, especially in brokering, you know, cross-continental deals? And how beneficial can that be?
Very, very beneficial. It's sort of in any business setting that negotiations are key, and having partnerships in different strategic areas is so key. And that's how you grow. You know, you can't do everything by yourself. If you work with someone, you know, that's double the effort. That's two people working towards a common goal. They're going to put all their efforts and all their energies into making something happen. Maybe there's a negative perception around the word agents because of the commission, but at the end of the day, if players are happy to pay the commissions because their agents do get them the best deals, I think that's what we should take into account. So the word agent is never a great perception as well. That's why probably they've termed us intermediaries now. But in terms of partnerships and that, I think it's really key, especially since how we were saying about how FIFA deregulated it. Now it belongs, you have to register with individual associations. So for me, based in England, the UK is sort of my mandate and my remit, but we could have a partner in Belgium. And obviously I can't be, you know, too many places at one time. We actually have a strategic office in Spain, in Valencia as well. So I spent a bit of last year out there as well, working with our partners and colleagues out there. But it is hugely important because, you know, they can foster different relationships with clubs out there. You might have a partnership in South Africa or in Ghana or somewhere, because they're able to recruit better. You know, you can't be out recruiting in Ghana and then you can't, you know, fly and foster a relationship with a club out in Norway, for example, because relationship building takes time and a lot of effort. So it's definitely better if people, you know, sort of collaborate and put all their efforts and energies towards the same common goal. I think people will get a lot further. And that's just my way of looking at it. I think some people would agree, some people would disagree. But I think if there's a joint effort towards a project, you know, and obviously there's going to be a share of the take, if you will. But, you know, if with that joint effort, there's often more to take at the end of the day. And also with the thing with partnerships, it has more longevity and sustainability within it. You know, it can go on for years and years, whereas if you're trying to do everything by yourself, you'll be exhausted.
We're going to talk a bit about Percy Tau and Brexit a bit later. I would just like to know, I mean, there's probably a lot of people that are listening to this podcast that don't know how a deal is brokered. So say now, for example, Club X is interested in Player Y. Where does the agent come into play, and how big a role do you guys play in making sure the transfer goes through in terms of, you know, the contract, the transfer fee, specific clauses. I mean, you know, I think just to come back to the glamorous point of view, I don't think people understand how much paperwork there is in all of this probably. And, you know, a lot of admin, so to speak.
Yeah, that's why I'm grateful for my, the sort of degree that I studied as well. It gave me a really, really good insight into the regulatory and administrative side of it as well, which is huge. A large part of it is obviously relationship building, but there is a lot of behind the scenes paperwork that's involved. And this is why I sort of would encourage or welcome FIFA reintroducing an exam, just because it ensures a bit of competency as well as people entering the market, because right now the barriers are down. So anyone can just, you know, pay a fee and register as an agent. And some people's intentions might not align with the players or might not be morally correct. But yeah, in terms of paperwork, there's a lot, and there's a lot behind it. That's maybe a bit on the boring side. So the interesting stuff about the transfers is legally clubs can't speak to another player who's contracted to another club, because this will be sort of classed as tapping up and a breach. So they use the agents to kind of just see if the player is potentially interested and if the club is willing to sell that player, if there is a deal to be done. And, you know, clubs have a lot of day-to-day rings that they have to deal with as well. So having, again, agents that they can trust and they can work with, you know, it helps spread the load as well. And they might have different connections or industry relationships that could make things more of a smooth and efficient process. So they, you know, could ask you to give you like a sort of remit of what they're looking for. Or if there's a particular player that they've eyed out and they know you have good ties with that club, you can speak to that club, see if they are, first of all, interested in you know, opening negotiations with that club about that player. So there's always sort of two deals that happen. It's first of all, club to club. So the clubs have to agree on a fee for the player. Then once that's all agreed, although this normally happens sort of in parallel with it, then it will be the new club to the player that has to agree terms. And that's where all the fees and the clauses will come in. In the Premier League, it's really standard. There's a standard Premier League contract. So most players sign the same contract. Obviously, all the there's a few different clauses and schedules at the end, which just has different information pertaining to their fees and maybe squad win bonuses and that sort of thing. But all their image rights and that is covered in this contract. So, yeah, first of all, it has to go from club to club to agree. And then it will go from new club to player to agree terms and work out all their wonderful clauses. And between club to club, it's interesting, actually, the notion of a sell-on fee. You know, that could strategically be used to a good advantage, especially for undervalued clubs and players who could look better in the future, rather than trying to, you know, just grab everything at the moment and take a short-term view on a player, maybe accept lower money but a higher sell-on for the future. And that's the way I think that clubs, particularly in Africa and South Africa specifically, could better use the transfer market and become maybe more of an export league, because, yeah, I'm sure we'll get onto this about South African players coming abroad. Yeah. But, yeah, for Percy, it's really, really exciting. I'm sure everyone is as excited as I am to see a South African in the Premier League. Finally, it's been a long wait.
Yeah, before we get on to Percy, you touched on buyout clauses there, and I think it's something we see quite prominently in Spain, and you being based there, you know, for a few months or a few weeks a year. How does a buyout clause exactly work? And yeah, maybe just elaborate on the sell-on fee. Like, is there a percentage at clubs? How does it work exactly? Just for, you know, for us out there that don't understand how these things work exactly.
Yeah, of course. So when a player is contracted to a club, say they have a 3-year contract, within that 3 years, they can only move, because the club holds a player's registration. That's essentially what the contract is. So they have that player registered to them for 3 years. So in that 3-year period, the only way that they could join another club, apart from loans, of course, is when during that 3-year window is for another club to buy the player's registration. And often clubs will protect their players by adding buyout clauses. So if a certain amount, it's usually higher than what the club initially values the player at.
Yeah.
Say it's, let's say, for example, £20 million. once the club offers that, then they'll be enabled to begin negotiations with that player to buy out the registration fees. In Spain, it works in a slightly different way, that the players technically have to buy themselves out of the contract, and some of their fees are crazy, ridiculous money. So say it's, this is a low figure for a good player. It's 100 million. The player himself would actually have to pay that, but often it would be funded by the buying club through the player, to buy him out of his registration so that he's able to register with the new club. Because else the player would have to wait till the end of his 3 years. Then he becomes a free agent where he can join a club he chooses.
Okay, very interesting.
And without any transfer fee attached to it, of course.
Yeah, and sell-on fee, how does that work? I think everyone that plays FIFA will know about a sell-on fee, but how does it work in the real world?
Fairly similar. You'll be surprised, actually. The FIFA developers have done a pretty good job. It's just another sort of economic tool that clubs use to help finance deals as well. Because deals, for one, they're never paid as we see them. So say a player transfers for 50 million, it will usually be half of that on the day the player signs or that the deal's negotiated. And then the rest will normally be paid in installments throughout the duration of the contract. So that's just one way clubs finance deals. But then to help, like I say, add an economic tool to it, and it's usually used for clubs in, say, we call them like holding countries or gateway or stepping stone countries, say Belgium, for example.
Yeah.
A club in Belgium will buy a player from, let's say, a club in South Africa. And then the club in South Africa, maybe if they had their thinking hats on, they could see they might value the player differently to what the club in Belgium wants to pay for the player. But they also know they need the money right now. So they'll sell the player to Belgium for 1 million and then add a 20% sell-on clause on the future fee. So when that player is never going to spend his entire career in Belgium because, you know, he wants to move on to, say, the Premier League. So then that club, I'm trying to think of an easy example for maths because I'm not great at it. Say the Belgian club sells him to the Premier League for 10 million, then the South African club will get 20% of that 20 million sale fee.
Okay.
Minus a few additional costs in that, but that's the simplicity of it. So it's 20% of a future fee.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that's quite...
Which in turn takes the value because the South African club was never going to get, say, 3 million for the player straight away.
Yeah.
So they sell him for 1 million and then maybe 2-3 years down the line when the Belgian club sells him on, the Belgian club sells him for 10 million to the Premier League, and then 20% of that will go to his original club, the South African club. So, you know, in the long term, it kind of makes sense if you see the potential and the value in your player.
Yeah.
And this is something I actually studied at, I did a lot of research into this and created a whole report while I was at university interviewing players, clubs, agents, sports lawyers, about future financial investment in potential growth. And there's a football ecosystem and clubs in Europe understand their position in the ecosystem. So clubs in Norway and Sweden and Denmark and even Portugal, let's say, they know they're not going to win the Champions League and compete at the highest level. So they know they have to recruit undervalued talent. So they'll scout in Ghana, wish more in South Africa, but let's say they scout in Ghana. They'll sell, purchase a player for 500,000 or even less sometimes in the hope of making a potential return on that player when they sell him to a club in Belgium.
Yeah, I think
and so forth.
Yeah, I think a good example of that is the way Leipzig and Salzburg do business. I mean, if you look at Salzburg, they also have a feeder club within Austria, right? I think it's called Liefering, and that club. They get talent from Africa. So it's almost like this, like you say, like you use the term, a stepping stone club in the
end. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what the sort of the focus is. Sorry, just to touch on that. Salzburg will scout players in Africa. So they've got quite a large African contingent in Patson Daka, Soyku Keita, Enoch Mwepu. They'll come over to Austria, but to acclimatize to European football because it's really different. they'll go to the second division in Austria to their feeder club, Liefering.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in principle, the aim is for Salzburg to sell them on to Leipzig. But just to touch on a good example of a player moving to different gateway holding countries to get into a first division is a young Senegalese player called Crepin Diatta. So he did well. I don't know if it was the under 18 or under 20 AFCON. He did really, really well. And he went to Norway to a team called Sarpsborg, I think. So, you know, he would have been not really noticed going to Norway, nothing major, nothing extravagant. I think he got player of the season in Norway. He transfers to Club Bruges in Belgium, has a really, really good time there, obviously playing with Percy as well. And then recently they've sold him on to Monaco in France. So that's just sort of the path that players take, because coming straight from Africa to a top five league is not impossible, but it's really difficult for one coming from the standard of African football and then making that jump into the Premier League. That's not an impossible.
Yeah. If the Norwegian club played their cards right, they'll have a sell-on clause, and you know, that's how the cycle works in the end of the day.
Yeah, so I'm sure they would have definitely had that in negotiating the contract when he moved on to Bruges. So when Bruges subsequently sold him to Monaco, I'm sure that Norwegian club would have received a fee for that as well.
Yeah, that's all very interesting. Is there any like interesting clauses you've seen in contracts over the years? I mean, I've always watched these YouTube videos where they talk about, you know, a guy had an interesting clause about the... I'm just using a stupid one, but you know, he was a certain number of flights home a year, or you know, if he scores this amount of goals, then he gets a new car or whatever. Are these clauses real, or and how prevalent are they in contracts in today's world?
Yeah, they are real. So the flying home one is common. They'll give them, I think, say for example, 4. Sometimes the clubs are a bit selfish and only give them economy class tickets. Okay. To use throughout a period. But yeah, clauses can range from anything, absolutely anything that you'd like to include in it. But yeah, the common ones is, again, flights home, not being able to participate in sort of extreme sports, or some of them even like playing leisurely football outside of your club. They don't permit that, you know, in the case of injuries. Some players aren't allowed to snowboard, and all those sort of things. It's crazy. And that again just comes to whoever has more power, whether it's the club who has more power to insert those clauses to restrict the player from doing a lot of things they maybe should or shouldn't do.
Okay. Yeah, that's all very interesting. There is
a few wacky clauses in there.
Yeah, maybe we'll touch on that in another podcast. Maybe we should shift focus to Percy Tau. I think a lot of people listening to Disky Discussions would, you know, I'd love to know exactly how Percy's move happened, considering, you know, I think, you know, for myself, you know, I didn't think it was quite ironic that, you know, Brexit played a part in Percy coming to Brighton. How exactly did that happen? And, you know, what value have you seen in Percy's move there? Obviously, he hasn't played as much as we'd like, but do you see a future for him in the Premier League? Maybe not in the Premier League, you know, at Brighton, maybe somewhere else, but obviously very excited to see a South African, a fellow South African in England.
Yeah, it's always exciting. And, you know, I still get pure joy when I see a South African come abroad to Europe. So when they come, you know, to the Premier League, you know, sort of down the road at Brighton, it's really exciting. And just hopefully I get the opportunity to go watch him do his thing in the Premier League. Because like I say, touching on players that are based abroad, it's exciting. And it's exciting for our national team as well. Just to quickly, sorry, touch on, there's a few players based abroad. Keggs Chauke, who's at Southampton, and Sia Ligenza, who's at Cardiff. I went to go sort of scout these boys when they were, you know, young, just so that the rest of the South African population can see them and can follow them as well.
Yeah.
Because it brings great excitement. But Percy's obviously the main one because he's the stalwart in the national team. So to see him come to the Premier League is really exciting. But I'd hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't think it's going to open a doorway for more South Africans to sort of flood the English market. So just to quickly touch on how international transfers work very quickly, there's a clause, FIFA Article 19, prohibits the transfer of minors. So players under the age of 18 can't move abroad to another national association, to another club in a different association. There was exemptions to this. One of them was players between the ages of 16 and 18 could move abroad if their countries and clubs belonged in the European Union. So this has sort of fallen away. Obviously, with England leaving the European Union, this has come away. And then to touch on a senior level, it's not really going to open a gateway for South Africans because there's still a lot of restrictions and requirements. A lot of the lawyers are still trying to get their head around it. I'm still trying to get my head around it as well. But in essence, the previous regulations was if your country was ranked in the top 50, you know, it was a lot easier to get into the national, to qualify for a GBE, which is a governing body endorsement, a lot easier. With South Africa being ranked 72 or 71, I'm not sure where it is, they would have to have played, I think, over 75% over a 24-month period. This has now changed, though, but it's actually made it more difficult for South Africans to come abroad. So basically, there was a whole weighing up of commercial interest between the Premier League, the Football Association, and the Home Office, who deals with immigration and work permits into England. The Premier League, for one, their commercial interest is to have the best players in the league. The FA wants to focus on homegrown talent, and then the Home Office, who has the power and the authority over both because they deal with the ins and outs and border control, want only talented workers who can raise the level of the country, and their profession, so in this case, football. So there was sort of a balancing act and all of those sort of authorities trying to get their propositions opposed and find a balance. And they've come to this sort of balance that is, again, ruled by the Home Office, the new GBE, which is a points-based system. So players need 15 points, I think it is, to automatically qualify for a work permit to play in England. If your country is ranked from 1 to 10 and you play, I think, 30% of those games for the national team, you automatically get it. And then it kind of moves up on a staggering level. So I think 11 to 20 is 40% of games for your national team over a 24-month period. Then there's different bandings. So if your club is in band 1, which is the top 5 league, you get 12 points. If your club plays Champions League, you get a certain amount of points. So I think the case with Percy, which was actually interesting, when he first moved to Europe, he played second division in Belgium. So this is kind of twofold because on the one hand, it helps him to acclimatize to living in Europe and getting used to European football. Not the highest standard, but he can kind of phase himself in. On the other hand, at the time, under the old regulations, this wouldn't have helped him at all to get into England. It wouldn't have contributed to the points. But maybe you could look at it in hindsight and say it kind of worked out because he did well there. He went to Bruges. He did really well. He played in the Champions League, which would have happened over the past 24 months. So under the new regulations, it has helped him in that sense that he's played Champions League and Belgium is banned too, I think. So that would have been a certain amount of points. And then it's now shifted. So for South Africans, as they're ranked outside of the top 50 on the FIFA rankings, I believe they have to play like 90% of the available games for the national team. So this has really, really made it more difficult for South Africans coming into the Premier League. So like I say, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but there's not going to be an influx on South Africans coming into the Premier League for the foreseeable future. And Percy's kind of an exception to this because he did really well in Belgium. He plays a lot of games for the national teams. Previously, there was an exceptions panel. So you could argue the case in front of a panel for a work permit, a governing body endorsement. And this would be things also including the wage of the player would have to be in a certain percentile and his transfer fee would have to be in a certain percentile to show that he can add value to the league, which is in the interest of the Premier League. The only people who are this new regulations is really going to benefit, how I see it, is Latin American countries and players.
Okay. Yeah, that's all and, carry on.
Oh, sorry. I'm trying to make it as sort of straightforward and hopefully I'm not going to...
No, it's very interesting. Yeah, please carry on.
So under the European Union, there was free movement of labor. So players could come into England as and when they wanted, essentially, no matter how good footballers they were. So this was easier for clubs to recruit European players because the paperwork and the administrative side was less of a headache. It was so much easier to get players. And this is going to affect... So sorry, now with Brexit, there's no more that free movement of labor. So now clubs don't necessarily have to look at a French player or at a Portuguese player, for example. They can look abroad because everyone's kind of under the same umbrella of these new criteria of 15 points for the governing body endorsement. Whether you're from Colombia or if you're from France, you still have to fall under the same bracket now. And this is going to affect clubs like Brentford, who have a really strong recruitment model on undervalued talent. They're unable to just sign players. They signed a French player called Brian Mbeumo. They wouldn't be able to sign him now because he wouldn't qualify because he was playing second division in France and he barely played for the national team or the youth national team. So his points wouldn't have qualified. Whereas you look at the South American teams, a lot of them fall in the top 20 or the top 30 even FIFA-ranked countries. So now for them to qualify, they just have to play a certain amount of games for their national team. And even if they play in their continental competition, the Copa Libertadores, suddenly they automatically qualify. So I think there's going to be a lot more influx of South American players coming straight into England, which wasn't necessarily the case. Brazilian players would often go to Portugal. Colombian players would often go elsewhere, even to Belgium or to Spain before they made that step into England. Now they can come with a work permit straight into England because the new criteria benefits Latin American countries far more than it benefits African countries. African countries that could potentially, I think, that just fall in the cusp of the top 50 is maybe your Senegals, Nigeria's, Algeria. Ghana, I think, is even just teeters on the cusp of the top 50. But to make it short and concise, if you're in the top 30, your national team sort of aggregated over a period and you play a certain amount of games. So 1 to 10 in the FIFA rankings is 30% of national team games. 11 to 20 ranked is 40%. And 21 to 30 is 60% of your national team games. Then you automatically qualify to come and play in the Premier League. So for South African players, they have to play 90% of their games over a 24-year period. Yeah, and that doesn't even automatically qualify them. So realistically, for South African players, not to burst anyone's bubble, but they have to go into a stepping stone country to your Portugals, your Belgians, and even sometimes less than that to your Czech Republics or your Poland so that you can make a step into an actual stepping stone country. So, you know, if England and the Premier League is the goal, which maybe it should be because arguably the best league in the world, you have to understand that your pathway is different to that if you're Colombian or Argentinian, for example. And that again comes down to our national team. So, you know, that could all change in a couple of years if with Vision 2022 and we do really well in some aspects, but we really, really need to break into the top 50 to give our players a chance of playing at the best leagues in the world. But the route into Spain is also an interesting one because they have what's called the Cotonou Agreement. So in Spain, they have a quota on non-EU players, which I think is 5. But because of the Cotonou Agreement, many of the African countries don't actually qualify against the quota. So they won't make up spots where South American players do. So for instance, if Atletico Madrid have one more non-EU spot and they are looking between an Argentinian and a Ghanaian, and they are sort of same similar play style, the Ghanaian, if I'm correct in saying that Ghana is a signatory to the Cotonou Agreement, they'll sign him because he won't take up that spot as well, whereas the Argentinian player would take up the spot. So personally, I think Spain and La Liga is potentially a better route for our players, maybe because the play style could be similar as well. You know, our players are tactically good. Yeah. They have the technical ability. So the Premier League in England is a very physical league. as we've seen with Percy, you know, he played in the FA Cup at Newport, which is probably one of the worst pitches. And then I think, straight after that, he's played against Manchester City, and he actually did quite well in that game. You know, he didn't set the pitch on fire, but you could see something there. And I think a lot of Brighton fans can see something in Percy, but we have to understand also, like, as football fans, we want to obviously see Percy play. We want to support him, but we have to understand Brighton's position and the financial implications. They are fighting relegation.
Yeah.
It's not clear that they're safe. So they, you know, can't really blood in a new player just for the benefit of Slavkin fans. They have to win games and survive. And I think Percy is adjusting to the league still. I really wish he came to Europe younger. I really wish, because he would have acclimatized quicker, phased himself in quicker. But he's going to be 27 this year. So, yeah, I think he's got the mentality and the ability to prove a point, though. But just wish it all happened a bit earlier in his career. But nevertheless, still exciting to see him walk out with the team, you know, with the Premier League on his sleeve. It's really good. We haven't really had that in a while, have we?
No, not in a few years. Yeah, it's very interesting and something to keep an eye on, especially, you know, of more Africans potentially moving to La Liga, obviously a very strong league in itself. And maybe, you know, the end of the day is this is all a journey. And if you want to get to the end goal, you have to take sacrifices. And I think that's what a lot of players need to understand. If we could just quickly, you mentioned Chauke there from Southampton. He was in the South African news over the last bit. What have you made of him? I think as South African viewers, we haven't seen much of him. He's been on the bench, I think, a few times for Southampton. To be honest, he's only really come into the spotlight from a South African perspective over the last year or two or so. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can't get into England in you know, this long way, maybe the best way is for them to go over as newborns. what do you make of Chauke? And, you know, do you see a future for him in the Premier League?
Yeah, so like I say, it's good to see players at the top level, and a lot of the players are doing it in a different way, because many people perhaps thought that he, you know, that Southampton recruited him from South Africa or whatever the case. But no, he moved there when he was young with his family. He grew up there and joined the academy just like any other player who grows up in England, who's good at football. They'll get recruited and they'll move into the academy system. So it's just something that I love doing as well. You know, in-depth research into players who are eligible for our national team. I remember I always used to do it to find players who could play for our national team one day. Nicola Tavares, there was Sif Madulose at Southampton as well. You have a player at Leicester as well, in Kanya Lechebela.
Yeah.
So Keggs as well. I remember just because you asked me earlier, my day-to-day, obviously it's really different now in COVID, but previously would be attending matches, probably 4 or 5 matches a week, and then a lot of meetings and research. So I was doing research into the clubs, and I came across this name, and you have a feeling like, no, there's something here. So I went down to a Southampton game. He was actually playing up in age level, which in England is a really good sign that the player is promising. So he was 17 and he was playing for the under 23s, which is a really, really strong sign. So went down there, you know, he had a lot of ability, spoke to his dad, and his dad obviously has strong affiliations to South Africa. But yeah, Keggs is a really exciting player because obviously he's been cultivated and educated at Southampton, which is, you know, quite well renowned in England. They're classed as Category 1 academy. So they have the best coaches and the best facilities. And even though he's not playing, which I would be surprised if he was playing, because he's just turned 18, I believe, for him to be in the matchday squad, that's a lot of experience for a player as well.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should get too ahead of ourselves as South African, you know, like, celebrate when he's on the bench, which is obviously, you know, the first time it happened. Was it against Liverpool? I think he made the bench. And
yeah, I think it was.
It's a huge achievement, obviously, but for one, the squads are increased because of the COVID restrictions. So, and if you see on Southampton's bench, they have a lot of youngsters. And he's only 18, so they still need to protect him. You know, they can't just throw him into the team. And Southampton as well are fighting for points. But yeah, he's a really, really gifted player. he has the strong South African physical features. You know, he can run for days. He's quick. He's quite tall for his age as well, which I think is beneficial. So he's got a good frame, but on the ball, he's very, very good, very talented player, technically astute and proficient. He's tactically malleable, so they can play him in a variety of different positions. But I don't think there's going to be a rush to get him integrated into the team soon, which is something that I wish we could see. But, you know, you have to understand he gets the opportunity because he got called up to England under 18s. He has the opportunity to go and train with the best players in that age group in the country. And that is a high, high level, because the players that England are producing is on another level.
True.
And he gets to go on an international break and go train at St. George's Park, which is world-class facilities. You know, you can't blame him. You really can't blame him. At this age group, maybe you could argue going forward that spaces in the England national team is going to be limited, which they potentially are. And I think he will, at some point, maybe even at under 20 level, start integrating with South Africa if they want him, which they should do. It wouldn't make sense why they wouldn't. But where he is now, it makes more sense for him to train and play with England under 18s at a world-class facility. He'll play against top European opposition. You know, he'll play against the Spains, the best players in those age groups. He has to do it. He's going to work with the best coaches. He's still 18. There's no need to rush him or put too much pressure on him at all.
No, 100%.
But yeah, he is definitely one to keep an eye out for. And now that he's sort of been integrated, he's at that age where he could actually go on loan next season or definitely the season after. He's played under 23s football, and in England, under 23s football kind of has a ceiling. If you play three seasons of it, you kind of stagnate, you kind of plateau. There's nowhere really to go. You need to go play men's football. That helps you grow. So hopefully that's the path for him.
Yeah, most definitely one to keep an eye on. I think, you know, if we can maybe just close off on the note of, you know, South African players and what age they should try and, you know, move over to European football. I know, you know, sometimes, you know, it's, we hammer, you know, on the topic quite a bit and for good reason, I feel. And there are reasons why African players are reluctant to go overseas. Obviously they get paid very well in South Africa. But what would your advice be for young players, especially now working, you know, on the agent side of things and seeing all these things that you do? What advice are for what is your advice to young players that want to go and play in Europe?
So for players wanting to come abroad, I think they initially have to understand that there's a lot of sacrifice. A lot of sacrifice needs to be made, because everyone your age who plays football wants to do what you do and wants to go play for this team, but there's only a limited amount of places available at European clubs. So you have to be the best of the best. You have to be the best in your country, one of the best, for you to get recognized to go abroad. But mentality and discipline is huge, huge factors. You know, your ability is maybe 50% of what makes it. The rest is your discipline, your nutrition, and your mentality. You know, how resilient are you? Can you make the sacrifices? Your friends are, you know, you're in your teenage years. Your friends are going out on a Friday. Do you have the strength to say no because you've got a game coming up? So you need to rest to recuperate, be prepared for that game. Can you go move abroad, live away from your family, live away from your comfort zone? They might speak a language you've never heard of. It's going to be cold. There's a lot of challenges. But then coming on to the point of age, I think this is where South Africa sort of lags behind, especially if you compare us to the other nations, which I suppose you have to do if you're looking at it on a continental level.
Yeah.
You take Nigeria, for example. I think that's the easiest one to use. They have a player who transferred for 70 million euros in Victor Osimhen to Napoli. And you think, wow, like, when is South Africa going to be on that level? They have regular players in the Premier League doing well, and Wilfred Ndidi. They have a player in La Liga, Samuel Chukwueze. So Nigeria, the West African countries sort of set the benchmark for us, but there's a common denominator for me. And it's even a common point. If you look at the South African players who have played in the Premier League, your Benny McCarthy's, your Steven Pienaar's, what age did they come to Europe?
Yeah.
They came to Europe, you know, at a young age. They didn't come when they were 24, 25. They came when they were young. And the best thing to do is for our players to come across before they're 21, because when they, you know, as early as possible, they're in a good development window. So they can come, they can make mistakes, but they can learn. They can learn to adapt to European football, to the pressures of the game, because the tempo is so much higher on a European level. You know, your time on the ball is very, very limited. So players have to work, they have to understand new systems. And it's also getting out their comfort zone to really, really stress yourself. And a player who isn't playing in the Premier League, but he did very, very well at Brentford, and his time in the Netherlands was Kamahelo Mokocho. And I remember going to speak to him after Brentford games and watching him. You know, the fans loved him. And that's a player that sort of encompasses, he should be the model, because I think he left home at 11. So can you imagine being 11 and moving away from your family? I think he went to Super Sports Academy. So that's already a hard time. And then I'm not sure what age it was. Him and Kermit Erasmus moved to Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Yeah. That's a huge jump. That's not easy. But, you know, being a footballer is not easy. You have to make the sacrifices. If you have the ability and you have the talent, great. That's a huge help. But it's only half the task and half the job. So you have to put your head down. You have to work. And I think with South African players, that's my passion point. And I'd love to see more of us in the top five leagues. I think the players in Portugal, maybe that's for a separate podcast, they are doing very, very well. And they are in a great stepping stone country in Portugal. Luther Singh moved over to second. He was playing for Stars of Africa. And he moved over to a second division team in Sweden. No one really heard of him because it's not as glamorous. He did really well there, got a move to Braga in Portugal. And he's had various loans across the Portuguese first division, doing really well. But again, he came at a young age. He played in Sweden. It's cold. It's a different play style. You know, that whole getting used to European football, living away from home. So when a player comes to Europe at 24, we think, great, that's great. But then everything suddenly shifted. And there's a ceiling when you're a player. Say you play till, being generous, 35.
Yeah.
You're suddenly closer to that. So if we look at Percy Tau, who, don't get me wrong, he's a fantastic, fantastic footballer. And he has the mentality, but he came to Europe a bit too late, I personally think, because now he's suddenly getting used to the Premier League. When he adapts, it's going to take him maybe a season to adapt, if he's still there. Who knows? Brighton may decide he's not for them, because they have Alexis McAllister and Trossard, who are younger than him. They might shift him off, but he's going to have a great career in Europe. Don't get me wrong. He's a fantastic player, but it begs the question of, if he came abroad younger, you know, and even if he went to second division Belgium at a younger age, what he'd be doing now would be just incredible to see. And I think that's the key thing, the age. And maybe the clubs are a bit reluctant to release players because they feel maybe if they keep them, the South African clubs keep them on a bit longer, they can sell them for more money, which, as we've seen in previous years, isn't the case. But I also think that it's kind of a weird situation, because the PSL in Africa is commercially strong.
Yeah.
So that, the PSL and Egypt is probably the best leagues on the continent. They have a lot of commercial success. So the salaries are higher. So it's easier for a player in say, South Africa. This is just the consensus. Maybe he's come from a difficult background, which a lot of players in South America and the rest of Africa, they always come from difficult backgrounds as well. They really, really, their why, their passion, their purpose is so, so strong that they have to make it as a footballer. This is their mentality, to take their family out of that situation. And in South Africa, it's easier to achieve that level because the salaries in the PSL is so high. You know, you can be a well-paid player, live a comfortable life playing in South Africa. And that's great if that's what you want. Like, nothing against that. That's fantastic, because you take care of yourself and you take care of your family. But if you want to come abroad, you have to make that sacrifice, make that struggle. And that's why, I don't know if hunger or desire is the right word, but West African players, why there's more of them in Europe, because their domestic leagues aren't as strong. So they have to get out. They have to go. They'll go playing in Slovakia and Croatia and Czech Republic. There's also this sort of sliding scale. When you're a young player, maybe 70% has to be focused on game time, and the rest has to be focused on money. And then as that shifts, you know, as you get to your mid-career, it's maybe 50-50. And then to the latter stages of your career, you're less focused on game time and you're more focused on your financial remuneration to take care of yourself long term.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to be prepared to even earn little to nothing, you know, just to get your foot in the door, so to speak, to really, really make it happen. And I think just to kind of close off, we know that there's talent in South Africa, right? You've seen it. I've seen it. People have seen it. We've had a Champions League winner before. Let's not forget that. We've had a player who was a stalwart at his club in Stephen Pienaar as well, who was huge, hugely important for that Everton side. We have talent in the country, but there's less eyes on the country now because European clubs, you have to put yourself in their perspective. They can go get players from Ghana, from Senegal, from Mali, who maybe they feel their players have a better mentality. But if we open our doors to them, if we start sending more players abroad at an earlier age, other clubs will stand up and take notice and be like, wow, there's a lot of talent here. Gift Links, for example, he's doing really well in Denmark. That's good because then people know that there is still that talent. Lyle Foster, he's doing all right. He's maybe hit a bit of a bump, but he's still a good player. There's a great player inside there. So, but these are still small scale numbers if you compare them to the rest of Africa. So I think as a whole, we need to send them abroad, but then it's sort of balancing the interest again of the PSL. Does it want to be an export league? SAFA obviously wants to have the best players as well. But ultimately, it all kind of couples into each other that, you know, what are the objectives? If our objectives are, as a national team, to compete on a continental and an international level, our players have to be playing and training with the best players in the best leagues. And you know, as it is at the moment, that's in Europe. So the earlier players can come, get used to football, acclimatize themselves, go through their difficulties, go through that struggle.
Yeah.
You know, be in a situation of discomfort. You know, maybe you're not earning great and you're freezing cold because you're, I don't know, somewhere in Eastern Europe. But, you know, the club's paying for your room. They're paying for your food. You're not earning great. You know, you're not going to buy your dream car or build a big house just yet. But if you hang in there and if you do well, you just put your head down and it's football, football, football. You have the mentality, you have the desire, you have all the key skills and disciplines. You know, that's putting aside your technical ability. Then you know that, right, you're going from here, you're going to make it into Belgium because there's more eyes on the Belgium league or even the Danish league, for example. There's more eyes on that. And that's how getting your eyes on you, that's how you end up in the Premier League. One case, sort of, just to kind of add an example to that, is Marvelous Nkamba.
Yeah.
You know, a Zimbabwean player. He played, I'm not sure where his first destination was, but I know he went to Vitesse in Netherlands as well. We went to Belgium, to Club Brugge. Boom, Aston Villa, Premier League.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect way to end off, Braden. I really appreciate your time and insight. It's been really interesting to hear from you. And for those listening to the podcast, where can they catch your work and where can they keep eyes on you going forward?
So I'm quite active on my Instagram, Braden Proctor, quite straightforward to find, do a lot of work there. And yeah, I have strong affiliations to South Africa. That's my passion point. Even that is, you know, people always tell me, oh, there's more opportunities to work with English or Spanish players. No, South African and Africa as a whole, that's my passion. That's my point. That's what I want to develop long term. I feel like that's my purpose. So sorry if I've gone off on a bit of a tangent here, you know, but if someone offers me the opportunity to talk about South African football and development, I'm going to take it. So really grateful for you, AB, and for your listeners for having me on. And yeah, I would love to do it again.
Cool. Thanks, Braden. Thanks for the kind words and all the best going forward.
Appreciate it. Take care. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you for listening to Disky Discussions. If you have any questions or guests you'd like me to have on the show, please hit me up at AB_Basson on Twitter or on Instagram. Stay safe, like, subscribe, aware.